You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
Hi, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you for coming out to the First Flip Seminar of this semester. My name is Alyssa, and I'll be introducing our speaker. Mr. Lang is the president and CEO of Decker & Cello & Douglas. He has been with DS&D over the past 18 years. His firm specializes in supplying and supporting Fortune 500 clients all facets of their building interiors in the Northeast United States and nationally. Mr. Lang earned his MBA in finance from St. John's University, Peters J. Tobin School of Business. He also earned his Bachelor's of Science in Marketing from Westchester University of Pennsylvania. Mr. Lang dedicates his time to mentor Enactus members as well as serves on the Enactus Advisory Board, providing the team with valuable insight and ideas. We are pleased to introduce Steve Lang.
Thank you, Alyssa. So I'm told that we are podcasting this, so I'm going to use the mic. But this is going to be an interactive discussion, so I'm going to hand the mic to you guys, or just repeat the question, maybe easier if you guys have a question, I'll repeat it into the mic and then I'll do my best to answer it. So yes, we are a commercial interiors firm. We do a lot of work for large corporations and we plan the interiors of office space for a lot of large corporate clients. But I just want to say a little bit about who I am first, because I think that's important. But before I do that, just by a show of hands, I was here a little less than a year ago, Tracy reminded me. Did anyone see the presentation, or is this pretty much a new group? Just by a show of hands, anybody listened to me before? Okay, so a couple people. So that's good. So most of this is new for most everybody. I kind of grew up in this area. First one to go to college in my family. I totally understand what you guys are going through, and I think I'm a product of education, right? So whether you're here for the 2 years and you're going to continue on, or whether you stop here and you go out into the world, to me, it's really about not necessarily where you go to school, but who you are as a person and what you're capable of and how you think about the world. I won't repeat all that for everybody. A little bit of a mantra for me growing up. This was on my wall as a kid. It's something my parents firmly believed in. And it's a little bit of that power of positive thinking. You know, I stand here in front of you guys today owning a $100 million company that really does business with a lot of large Fortune 500 companies around the country, if not in some cases the globe. And it's a little bit of luck, a little bit of hard work, and a lot of timing. So it's all of those things, and an education. So for me, it's all in your state of mind, right? It's what you think. Right? If you think you can do something, you can. You just have to put your mind to it. So to me, that's the difference, or that's people that are in a leadership position or want to lead or want to grow. You first have to think that you can, right? Another good one for me, I'll let you read that for a minute, just soak it in. It was from Theodore Roosevelt, and I'll tell you what it means to me in a second. So to me, this means get in the game, right? Get in the game. It's messy sometimes, make mistakes, you trip, you fall, but get back up, get in the game. That's half the battle. A lot of people like to talk about stuff, but they don't actually do stuff. Get in the game, you learn. I learn every day. I've made a lot of mistakes, but hopefully I've made a lot of right decisions too, but only because I get in the game. A lot of people report on the game. It's not as fun as being in the game. So that's what I believe Enactus represents, is that entrepreneurial mindset. I'm willing to try, I'm willing to do, I'm willing to try something. And just trying, just moving forward, I think is probably the most important thing I can tell you. You know, your age, as you think about what you want to do, you don't know what you want to do. Did I know I wanted to be a commercial interior, run a commercial interiors company, or own a commercial interiors company? I had no idea. But I got in the game and I figured out what was important to me and I did the things I love, and to me that's what's really important. So this is what we do. The company started back in 1829, but we plan a lot of interior space. I have About 150 employees in the firm. As I said, we're about $100 million in revenue. We are a middle market business, right? We're not a Fortune 500 company. But to me, that's a really cool place because we get to do a lot of really cool things and I'm not involved in, let's say, the corporate hierarchy of a major corporation. It's a middle market company, $100 million in revenue, 150 employees. So we have to try and do a lot of things. And in a bunch of different ways, we are very entrepreneurial in and of how we operate the company. We have to be. So let's talk about this for a minute. What is leadership? I want this to be a little interactive. What is leadership? What do you think leadership is? Yeah?
The ability to unleash the potential of everyone around you.
To unleash the potential of everyone around you? Who else? Great answer, by the way. Yeah?
To give direction?
Participating and not just commanding. It's great. Yeah.
Good at listening.
Right? Pull things out of people instead of tell them what to do. Right? If you understand your audience, you can guide them a little better. Good. So to me, leadership is really four fundamental things. When I look at my organization and I think about the things that we're focused on, it's really four key areas from my chair. It's talent, it's culture, it's performance, and strategy. Those are the four things that I work on every day in some fashion, right? Think about it. Those four things encompass really the entire organization. I know there are only four words on a piece of paper, but there's a lot under them, right? Think about a team that you played on or a team here that you're involved in or a group of people. If you don't have the right people, you really can't do much, right? You have the wrong people. If you don't have the right culture, if we don't all agree or align on a point of view, if we don't come from the same idea of what we're trying to accomplish, you really have no shot at making it work, right? Performance. If we don't measure what we're doing, how do we know if we're doing it well? So performance is really about measurement. And then strategy. What are we going to do? What are our priorities? What are the things we're going to focus on? Because once we know what those are, we can measure them. So leadership is a lot of things. But at the end of the day, it's about believing that you can. It's about trusting in other people and understanding what motivates those people. You know, I had an interesting learning experience recently on a deal that we were looking at. We're looking to acquire another company. And, you know, sometimes you think that an acquisition, as an example, is 100% math. You know, does it make sense? Does it align with the company? What's the price you're going to pay for something? And what are you going to get as a result of it? But there's another half of that equation, and that's the emotion of business, right? Because in the end of the day, business is people, right? So if you go back to that previous slide, it's about the people. So I want to hear from you guys a little bit, and I want to know what questions you're thinking about. I gave you a little bit of a heads up earlier, but I want to talk today not necessarily about me and about what we do, but about leadership. I have some other slides about different styles of leadership, but I want to open up some questions in more of a town hall kind of environment to let you guys ask what may be on your mind. I can prompt some questions, but I want to know what you guys are thinking about leadership. I want to use the next hour, we'll be done at 2:00. I want to use the next 45 minutes to talk about a little bit what's on your mind and help me drive the discussion. I don't want to be one of those talking heads up here that are just banging you through slides. I want you guys to think about if you're here, if you're a business student, if you're interested in some version of entrepreneur, if you've got something inside you that says, I want to be successful, what are you thinking about? What do you need to know? What can I help you with? Not that I have all the answers, but I'm a little older than you guys, and I've been at this a little longer, and I've made plenty of mistakes. So I want to hear from you guys. I'm not going to pick on any one of you, but somebody want to stand up to either that mic or just stand up and ask me a question, I'll give you the mic, or better yet, I'll repeat the question. A little unorthodox because I'm asking you guys to step up, but I'm curious what you guys are thinking about as it relates to business, leadership. Ask you to think a little bit. Yeah, stand up.
What would
would I have done differently if I could have talked to myself 20 years ago? That's a really good question. I love a starter good question. I would have spent a little more time in school learning about what all of the options are, right? I wanna, if I'm your age and I'm thinking about school, what I would have done that 20 years ago is I would have found more mentors within the school or outside of school that could help me see things at that age that I wasn't able to see for myself. So I did a little bit of that, but I honestly, if I think about it, I wish I did more of that. And necessarily, the mentors shouldn't necessarily be my friends and peers. They should be people that are older or wiser or, you know, unrelated to what I'm doing today. So I think I did a little bit of that, but at your age, I wish I did a lot more because I would have been able to move a little quicker through some things that I had to trip over along the way. Thank you. Yeah. Biggest mistake. You know, it's funny, my ego doesn't allow me to think I make mistakes, but I make a ton of mistakes. So I'll talk recently about a major mistake. So we made the decision a few years back to invest in a business, and I'll keep it very general. And I had a few people that worked for me that always had an excuse as to why the business wasn't performing, strategy, culture, talent, performance, wasn't performing at the level that it should have been performing at. And I trusted them, and I listened to them, but I never really understood because I didn't go do it myself, and that's the difference between leaders and managers, right? I can lead and I can coach and mentor people, but every once in a while in my role, I gotta dive all the way in and figure out exactly what happened so that I can come back up and help manage the organization. So when it walks like a duck, when it smells like a duck, when it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I didn't trust my instincts and listened to some of those people, but I knew they didn't have the right answers, and I didn't dive deep enough to find out what the problem was. Your gut's usually right. I mean, really, your gut's usually right. There's some other sixth sense, right? Something's not sit right with me.
Thank you.
Yeah. So commercial design, how did I decide on commercial design? You know, it's funny, it decided on me. So I graduated, I started my career in mobile oil, as I think one of those slides said, and I got out of mobile about 7 or 8 years. While I was at mobile, I finished my master's. They paid for my MBA in finance, so I had an undergrad in marketing and a master's in finance, and then a headhunter found my resume, because I was looking around to potentially leave mobile. Too big of a company for me. And a company called Steelcase found my resume. Steelcase is a manufacturer that we represent. They manufacture office furniture around Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I spent 2 years with them, and I worked with distributors who do now what I do, the only company I own. I worked with other people that own these companies around the country and found myself in a position to leave and join the company I now own as an employee back 17 years ago. So it wasn't necessarily about commercial design for me. It was about, I'm a student of business. I like business. It could really be any product or any service. Happens to be something that I like, right? You have to be passionate about what you do. You know, we help clients plan and prepare their space and create an environment where people can collaborate better. And so the solution is a great solution. I knew that I wanted to sell tangible products and not ideas, right? So I didn't want to sell financial solutions that were percentage interest rates. I needed an item to sell. And from there, it just evolved. You know, it was really more about leading people, working with people, and understanding people that led me to kind of elevate through the organization. Less about the product itself or the experience of commercial interiors, more about just a broad general leadership desire.
Yeah. What kind of culture do you have in your company?
So our culture, what kind of culture do we have in the company? Incredibly collaborative. So I own the company, I sit at the top of the organization. My role is no different, and I know it is, but it's no different than the average employee in the firm, because the way I look at it, the people that are closest to the problem or the situation or the opportunity are usually the ones that are best equipped to answer it. Now, I'm there to guide, I'm there to coach, I'm there to mentor, right? I'm there to make sure that the ship isn't headed for the iceberg, but it's a very collaborative culture. And I believe, and I want to skip ahead because there's a good slide that talks about, we can get into this a little bit. You know, traditional versus collaborative leaders, right? So the old days, traditional leaders led a little differently. Take a look at some of those, right? So it is more to me about that collaboration. So if we talk about all these things, collaborative leaders are, well, these are the seven, six, sorry, these are the eight areas. So it's really not about the position, right? It's about who's closest to the problem and what solution they can derive from the problem. So that's the difference, I think, in the way our culture is and how we lead the company, how I lead the company, maybe than some other companies are led, right? It's not as hierarchical as you would think it is, or it should be. Other questions? Should I march on? Yeah, I'm sorry. What advice would I give to millennials? Perhaps there's a perception of laziness or entitlement. I don't know if you said that. You know, I think it's my generation, and I'm going to generalize. My generation, I'm about to turn 50, as you saw Valentine's Day. My generation has, and this is an oversimplification and overgeneralization, an idea or a thought that maybe you guys are job hoppers, or you want to do multiple things, or when you're impatient, you want to move on to the next thing. And honestly, I think that is a foundation or a function of what you guys grew up with. It's different than what I grew up with. To me, that's an opportunity, not a challenge. So my message to the millennials or the next generation is, teach us. Teach today's leaders how you guys need to work differently. Teach us about how you need to be led differently. You know, my generation, or I should say the generation before me, my parents' generation, you work for the same corporation, you got a pension, and you got a really nice gold watch at retirement. You guys may have 15 or 17 jobs, you know, by the time you get through into your early 50s, perhaps, right? It's a little bit different. There's a little more access to technology, there's access to information, and things get done much quicker. I can tell you, our company, the folks we hired from your generation are up to speed quicker, make an impact sooner than I've ever seen in my 25 years of business. So you guys are armed with the technology, you grew up with it, right? Whether it's, you know, simple computer stuff or more complex, you guys grew up with it, it's part of your being. So you guys are up to speed and running way quicker than I think the average person, the average employee in the generation before you. So teach us, I think the message is teach us, and be vocal, but also have a learning mindset, right? Know that you don't have all the answers, but show us how we can get you the rest of the answers you need. Be vocal. Be vocal. What else? I'm going to keep marching through and then I'll stop in between. And by the way, if you have any questions on any of this, stop me. So think about information, right? From a traditional leader, I hold all the information because I have the power. You come to me and I'll give you the answer. It's a little different, right? In more of a collaborative leadership style, information to share. You guys have access to information. I don't have to tell you, you can go to Google and find it in a second. It's there, I can't hold it. You know, ideas, right? So think about the traditional leader. Yeah, I might listen to you if you have something important to say, as opposed to, oh my God, I need your ideas, I need your input. This is the kind of organization that we run back at my shop. I need your input, I need your ideas, I want you to tell me how you think because you see it differently. And we have to coalesce those thoughts so that we come up with the best answer. It's a different thought process, right, than perhaps the previous generation. It speaks to your question about, you know, hey, we need information, talk to us, communicate. What else are you thinking about? When we employ someone, what do we look for? In a word, heart. They have heart. They care. You don't have to be the smartest person. In fact, most of the times, exaggeration, often the smartest person isn't the best employee. They need to be left alone in a room crunching numbers or thinking through theorem and theory, but they have a hard time communicating. So heart. Do you care? Do you want to learn? Are you willing to do what it takes? Do you not have an ego? Do you not have a chip? To me, it's all about when you're collaborating, when you need an organization to collaborate to be successful, it's all about having the right team. So when you talk about culture, when I talked about culture and talent, do you fit in our culture? Yeah, if you have heart, if you really care, if you want to learn, and you're willing to put in the time, and you're passionate about it, that's three quarters of the battle. It's three quarters of the battle. So I would say to that end, sorry, find what you love. My message to you guys at your age in this room, find what you love. Did I love contract office interiors? No, but I love business. I love the student of, I was a student of business. I liked leadership. I liked people. And I wanted to do tangible things. I wanted to sell and help people solve problems with tangible things. So it was wide enough to accept a few different things, right? It doesn't have to be so narrow. But that's really important. Do we love? I love what I do. Love what I do. There isn't the worst day at work is still pretty awesome because I learned something and I got my, pardon the expression, got my ass kicked. Yeah.
From your company, do you do anything specifically to generate suggestions? Do you guys have like open meetings where you take suggestions from other employees? Is something that you can be doing better?
It's kind of like air. It's just there. We're constantly talking about it. There's a constant discussion about what can we do differently? How do we look at this differently? You know, we have competition like every other company, like every other organization, right? There are people that are out to take us, our business away. They're employed. They're, you know, out there to take our employees away to try to hurt us, and we're trying to hurt them in the spirit of, you know, sports and competition. It's really very much a part of our culture. There isn't a, you know, we have a suggestion box for meetings, but it's really about every day in the meeting, in the discussion. We had a new employee start. This is, story's about a year old, but it's really important. This woman starts with our company, and she's an administrator. She's in her 30s or 40s at the time, and you know, she's had a few jobs, and she's pretty good at Excel, and she's working on a spreadsheet for some of the work we're doing, and it's her first week on the job. And she's in the room, in a conference room, and we're talking about a presentation that we have to present to a client for a multi-million-dollar opportunity. She's there, her salesperson that she works for is there, the space planner, designer is there, the manager is there, because he's worried about the pricing and the structure of how we're going to do that, and I'm there, and somebody else is there, I guess, I don't know, or CFO or somebody, one of the other managers. So there's, you know, six or eight of us in the room. And we're talking through how we respond, what we need to do, what the strategy is. And I, as I often do, pontificate, well, this is what we should be doing. And she stops me and says, well, no, that's not right. This is what the spreadsheet asks for. This is how we have to put it together. And this is how we'll get to the end result. And then she stopped and she said, oh. And she looked at me like, holy, you know what did I just do? And I thanked her and I said, whoa, hold on a second. Kathy is her name. I said, Kathy, not only should you not feel bad about what you did, but quite frankly, you should feel great about what you just did, because forget for a moment that I own the company and you just started here. You're closer to that than I am. I didn't see that spreadsheet. I don't know that information. And you bringing that forth and calling me out, professionally speaking, was really healthy and got us to a better place. So it's ingrained in the culture. It's who we are. Thank you. Thoughts? Questions. I want to know what's on your mind, right? I want to know, as you guys think about your next role here at the next, you know, the four-year school, if you're finishing up here to go to the four-year school, what do you want to do? What do you want to know today as you head out into that journey, your first job, you know, full-time job after school, etc.? What do you think about as it relates to leadership, entrepreneurship? What do you want to know? Yeah. What do I do to influence people and motivate them to be better? No, because you can't fix stupid. You know, who's that comedian that said that, right? You can't fix stupid. If they don't want to do it, it's kind of hard to make them do it. So I think it starts with finding the right people and then give them a platform to be successful, right? Part of it's training, part of it's opportunity, part of it is challenging them to get them out of their comfort zone, right? So where do you do your best learning? I think you do your best learning when you're out of your comfort zone, when you're a little scared, when you step out on a ledge and you're trying something for the first time, it's really scary. That's how you get better. So when we find the right people, and not everybody in our company wants to move to the top of the organization, because some people are really good individual contributors, and they want to do a great job with what they have, but we still want them to step out a little bit and take a few risks so that they challenge themselves. So if you start with the right people and they're ready to challenge themselves, and we give them, or you give them, the right environment, it's okay to fail, right? Fail forward. Success is messy. You have to make a lot of iterations and reiterations and changes. Success is messy. So as long as you're not making the same mistake 12 times, it's okay to make a mistake. As long as you're trying something and you're being creative and you're moving forward. Yeah? Made so many mistakes. I want to apologize for all the people that were in my first direct reports. You don't know what you don't know. Think about that, right? You don't know what you don't know. So, big mistake I made is, let me show you how to do it the way I would do it. What does that do? Right? That's just a repeatable, right? I'm going to do it myself. So first mistake was telling people exactly what they needed to do. Just barking out orders. Do this, then come back to me. Do this, and then come back to me. It wasn't effective, right? I mean, I wasn't allowing them to think for themselves. So that was one big mistake. I think a second big mistake is not listening, which is a derivative of the same thing, but it's, you know, when they had something to say, I was always worried about what I was going to answer, and so I was preparing my answer as they were talking. How many times did we do that? Right? So, to me, I've learned over the years to be an active listener. Really listen. I know what I want. I know what I'm trying to accomplish in the organization. But if I just bark at you and not really listen, then I didn't let you get out what you're thinking and what you're feeling. I haven't made a connection with you so as to help you or guide you in the right direction. I just told you something and I totally misshot. I was aimed at the target, but I shot over there because you didn't hear it. Because I didn't hear you, and I was worried about what I was going to say next.
Could you give an example of something, the way you phrase something?
Yeah.
The order versus the goal?
Yeah, it's really in the question. So, you know, why did you do that? It's a little accusatory. Why did you do that? Right? What were you thinking? It's a little accusatory, right? As opposed to, tell me how you, right? How did you fill in the blank? So it's really in the question, I think. It's in the dialogue of and really wanting to know the answer. You know, something simple as, I don't know, what do you think? You know, it's a little counterintuitive for the first-time manager. Your employee comes in and says, I need some help, can you tell me what to do here? And instead of giving them the answer, you go, well, I don't know, Jim, what do you think? So, no, I asked you the question, you're not going to tell me what to do. So early manager in me said, well, let me tell you what to do. Older leader in me said, well, no, let's talk about that for a minute. What do you think? What are your options? Have you thought through those? If you had the, you know, what are the options? And then guide the discussion to say, oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, why were you thinking B as opposed to A? Okay, well, so then you got your answer. Right? So it's sometimes people just need to talk, they need to think through it instead of just come get the answer. Not always, but more often than not.
Someone needs to work for someone else, or do you feel that they don't necessarily have to?
Say that again. How long, being an entrepreneur, do they have to work for someone else, or can they? You know, I have a belief that you're always working for somebody. I work for our bank. I'm responsible to the bank. I'm responsible to the board of directors. We have an outside board of directors. So I own the company. I can make all the decisions, but I really want influence. I want other people. I want to be able to get perspective on things. So if you're an entrepreneur, you're working for your investors, you know, potentially your angel investors or other people that want to help you. You're working for your customers to try to solve problems for them. So it's a little bit, in my opinion, it's a little bit of a misnomer that an entrepreneur works for themselves, right? They work for the group of people that they've surrounded themselves with, and they are selling to their customers, so they're working for their customers, and they're working for their investors, and potentially for themselves, but not in the singular sense, right? It's a little bit of a different mind shift, I think, that, you know, and there are some entrepreneurs that are just mad scientists that will work for themselves. And those are, in my opinion, the people that are developing the next really cool thing that some other company will go market and sell and make successful. Right? Because the mad scientist is not working with a group of, arguably, is not working with a group of people. Right? They're the crazy entrepreneur thinking up the idea, but the company or the people or the person that's going to market that idea and take it to market and make it successful needs to surround themselves with a lot of people that they work for or with. Yeah?
Are there any books that you'd recommend to help us develop the habits to become a good leader?
There are a lot of books, a lot of good books out there. And off the top of my head, Malcolm Gladwell, did you guys read the book about 10,000 Hours? Outliers. How many people heard of the book Outliers? Read the book Outliers. Really cool. The concept is, and I'm not a real novelist, I listen to books on tape more than anything, but the idea is 10,000 hours. You want to be good at something? Do it for 10,000 hours. Michael Jordan was great at basketball. By the way, he didn't make his high school basketball team because he kept going. And 10,000 hours later, if he put in the time and the energy, he was Michael Jordan. So find something you love, and the 10,000 hours doesn't feel like anything because it's your vocation and your advocation. It's something you love to do. Did I love office furniture? No, but as I said before, I loved business. I loved the idea of leadership and strategy, and you know, whatever products applied to that was what made sense for me. So yeah, Outliers, great book, Malcolm Gladwell. Big fan of Seth Godin. Anyone heard of Seth Godin? There's a blog. I don't know the site, but if you just Google it, you can find him in 30 seconds, right? 3 seconds, I should say. Seth Godin, S-E-T-H-G-O-D-I-N. Subscribe to his blog. Get a little email every day. It's really insightful. I like that a lot. Seth Godin. Seth. Yeah, S-E-T-H, Seth Godin. What else? What's on your mind? How you want to be successful? Yeah.
How do you personally deal with
relationships? How do I personally deal with? I'm sorry, what kind of people?
Malignant.
What do you mean by that?
They don't have your best interest in mind.
Fire them. No, I mean, malignant people, if they're in the organization, right, if they're causing a problem in the organization, they don't belong here. Let's help them find somewhere else to be, right? If they're on the outside of the organization, they're affecting us, build a strategy to go around them or work through them. You know, don't try not to carve it out and remove it, if at all possible. Learn some valuable lessons about trying to make things work with might and, you know, determination. And at the end of the day, you know, not everybody's the same, not everyone thinks the same, and some people are a cancer within an organization, and they just need to be removed. You know when you're there. You just gotta pull the trigger. Yeah? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. For the cancerous person, you know, if they're outside your organization, you have to figure out how to avoid them or how to surround them so that you can navigate away from them. If they're in your organization and they're creating a problem, and you know it, pull the trigger. Nicely, by the way, pull the trigger, fire. I'm not like the Donald Trump guys, like, you know, you're fired. Listen, you know, letting someone go in the organization is sometimes, if it's done well, some of the best work you can do, because you do it with dignity, you do it with respect, you help the person if you truly believe it, you're helping the person land in a better place, perhaps a different culture, a different company where they can be successful. And if you do it with dignity, respect, it's usually, you find them, when they get through the pain, they're a friend. Or they respect what happened because you treated them with respect. Yeah? Always. I give someone a second and a third chance, provided they had heart. They cared and they were really working toward the solution. And that they were honest and said, you know what, I made a mistake. Or, hey, I was cancerous and I did feel really bad, but I'm over it and I'm willing to give it. And so actions and words need to be really consistent. So if I give someone a second chance, I'm watching their actions way more than I'm watching their words. Because if their behavior supports what they're telling me, we're good. If their behavior doesn't support it, they're feeding me a bunch of doo-doo. Yeah?
What was the most difficult situation or idea you've ever had to say no to? Just like turn them down?
Earlier in my career, before I owned the company I now own, when I worked for Steelcase, the manufacturer, I had a chance to go work in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and I was married, and I didn't have any children, but I made a conscious decision not to do that, and I thought it would be a really great worldly experience, and I thought I would learn a lot from a different culture, different company, a different country, but family was important to me. And I knew I was about to start raising a family, and I just didn't feel comfortable. It was right around the time, too, of the first Gulf War, if I got my dates right. So, you know, he was in an environment, although United Arab Emirates wasn't ever a friend, it was in the region of a dangerous place, and so I didn't accept the position. That was, I regret it, but I don't, if you follow me. It was a tough decision, really tough decision. Really good question. How do you know when the employee is ready to move from an individual contributor to a manager or a leader? In our organization, and this may not be true of all, we have more often than not already established that when they join the company, and I don't want you to think that that's the case always, but because of how we hire, we're hiring administrators who want to be administrators. So let me say it differently. There are certain roles in the company that we know we're hiring for the individual contributor. Then there are other roles in the company where we know if we hire the right person, we're hiring for two jobs later, and then he or she steps into the first job, and we're already coaching them and mentoring them on to the next job. So to help answer the question, make sure the full-time job that you land in has a trajectory beyond what you're looking for. Talk to them about what are my career goals, aspirations, and how do I accomplish them here. Because if you join the wrong role in our company, and you wouldn't because we wouldn't be interviewing you for it, but if you join the wrong role, you'll be an individual contributor. I think, by and large, our individual contributors are happy doing that. You know, they're men or women in their 30s and 40s, they have a family, they come to work 9 to 5, and they go home. And then we have other people that really want to grow and take on the added responsibility in the company. So, it depends on the role, right? It depends on every organization. In some organizations, in every organization, there are some roles that you need these solid contributors, and then there are some roles where you can move people around in the organization. I mean, when I started at Mobile, I started in a management training program. I spent a year right out of college in like 15 different jobs. Every few months or every few weeks, I would go to a different place, and it was part of their career management training program. Does that help answer? Yeah. I used to use our gut. It's not that good. Your gut's good for telling you intuition stuff, but we have a pretty rigorous assessment that we put every candidate through. It doesn't take very long. It takes a candidate maybe 45 minutes to an hour to question and personality profile. It tests for heart, and it also tests whether or not you're cancerous, if you will. If you really believe you think you can, right? Some of those earlier slides. We work with a company in Florida that helped build the assessment for us and a bunch of other companies in our industry. And we'll hire for the person based on relationships and recommendations, but every person that gets hired goes through this assessment. And so we'll know that they're either a really good fit or not a good fit. By the way, the assessment isn't a pass-fail. It's more of a, what is their personality? What is their what are their strengths and weaknesses as it relates to their style, their personality style? And with that, we'll know if they're fit for the right role. So we may interview someone, want to hire them, go through the assessment and say, we saw you for this role, but based on your assessment, and let's talk about that before you're hired, we think you might be a better fit for this role. And then it's a discussion. So it's really important. It's really important, the people you bring on from the organization. Really important. Yeah, I wouldn't call it psychological, though there are factors of psychology in it. But it's probably 20% psychology, 20% personality profile. I don't know, I'd have to add up to 100%. It's a few of those different things. And then just your acumen, right, a simple math and verbal test to just see where you are on some of those things. So we want to know what we're hiring. That's a whole other subject, interview questions. My favorite interview question, tell me about a time when. So we establish a rapport where I'm doing an interview and I say, well, you said, well, yeah, I've been really successful developing new ideas for my company. And you say that. And I say, well, interesting. Well, tell me about a time when you did that. So I want you, as an interviewer, I want you to tell me a story, because in that story, you're doing the talking, I'm actively listening, hopefully. And I'm trying to understand your thought process and what you have in there that tells the story. For the interviewer, or the person getting interviewed, I would say when you're telling your story, think of situation, action, and results. What was the situation? What was the action? What did you do? What did you cause? Right? What actions did you take? This is if you're being interviewed. And what were the results? Keep it simple, right? Situation. Oh, gee, thanks for asking that question, Mr. Lang. Here's the situation. I was in this thing in my Enactus group. And da, 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 da. What were the actions? What did I do? What decisions did I make? What actions did I take? And what were the results? It's kind of really simple, but sometimes in an interview we ramble. So that's a little nugget to take away. Situation, action, results when you're answering an interview question. And I think the best interviewers are asking you open-ended questions like that. There are really bad interviewers out there, by the way. Really are. What else? We got about another 5 minutes. I hope this was helpful, because I had a bunch of slides, but I just didn't feel like running through all those. Yeah? Absolutely. www.danker.com, DANCKER.com. Check our website out. Bunch of different internship opportunities, some paid, some unpaid. Yes? Oh, great question. How often do you look at and revise your business strategy? Once a year, we have an off-site retreat. We go away with the leadership team for a couple days, and we talk about business strategy and what we're trying to accomplish and what our objectives are for the next really year. The simple answer to the question is yearly, we have objectives. But really, 3 to 5 years, we have a business plan, and we tweak that business plan every year, but it's generally the same trajectory, the same direction. So for example, every year, we do this at the end of pretty October, November, as we head to our last, and we're a 12-month calendar year company. So back in November, we sat down as a leadership team. We forecasted our revenue, our gross margin, our expenses, our pre-tax profit, some of the things we want to do for capital expenditures. We do all that annually. And we have an annual budget, we break it down into quarters, we have a quarterly budget, and we measure that. So that's done once a year. And then there's a 3 to 5 year plan, which is a bunch of kind of corporate initiatives that we're going to do over the next 3 to 5 years. We make sure that those initiatives have specific actions to all of them each year. And then as we do them, we check them off. And usually halfway through the year, maybe a full year later, we're going to check and make sure that we're still on course We may have lost one initiative because for whatever reason it wasn't important, or we accomplished it, and then we may add a new one based on some new information or market information that we have. So it's a pretty, it's gotten to be for us a pretty rigorous process, and it's a lot of fun actually, I think. So we've got about 5 minutes. Any last question, anything on your mind? Yeah?
Do you have any plans after DSD?
Plans after DSD? You know, actually, I really do. I would really like to teach at the college level. You know, maybe be an adjunct professor, or maybe do that as kind of a part-time career later on. You know, still, relatively speaking. And the other thing is I sit on another board of a middle market company. So for me, that's really an interesting thing because I get to see how another company solves a problem and I can lend them some advice or some creativity or help them think through a problem. So perhaps sitting on other boards. But I am, you know, all of us in this room probably have hobbies. My hobby is business. I mean, I really, you know, I don't collect rocks. I don't, I like football, but other than that, yes, I'm a student of business. It's kind of a hobby for me and a vocation. Yeah.
Speaking as college students, what's one bit of advice you can give us for when we graduate college and enter into the business world?
One piece of advice is you enter the business world coming out of college. Don't stop learning. Don't stop learning. It's a lifelong journey. And today, it's on your smartphone. Continue to learn. If you stop learning, you stop growing. So I see a big connection between what you guys do every day and what I do every day. They're just in different environments. You know, I'm learning in a real-time environment, that quote from Roosevelt about get in the game. But in that game, I'm always looking, I'm always pulling. What else can I learn? Oh, shit, I gotta apply that point of view, right? I gotta think about this differently. So don't think that when you're done with school, you stop learning. It's only the beginning. Second thing, and I'll let you guys go. What I learned in school is, there's always an answer. I learned how to go find it. You know, and I didn't have as much access to technology as you guys did in college. But there's always an answer, so you just have to go find it. And then take it and apply, right? You get in trouble for school for plagiarizing. In business, you really don't get in trouble for plagiarizing. I mean, unless you're stealing someone's formula, like Coke's formula or something, you probably get in trouble. But, you know, I don't profess to have all the ideas. I just make a lot of good ideas that are in the marketplace better in my organization. I mean, I come up with some good ideas, I hope, but it's really learning from others and saying, ooh, that's really interesting. I can apply that in my business. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.